The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmatt Show. I am Jordan Ham, filling in for the big guy. Busy Friday. We have Suns playoffs. Merck is going on. The Arizona Diamondbacks. A lot to get to here in this next hour or so. A lot to talk about here in the state of Arizona. Very busy time of year, as always. So we're going to break down Suns Lakers. Look ahead to Suns Nuggets, what that postseason performance was against King James and Anthony Davis, even though he was only in for about 5 minutes. So we're going to break that down with ESPN NBA analyst PJ Carlissimo. Also going to talk to Sam Thomas of U of A women's basketball. It seemed like everybody was keeping an eye on what the Wildcats were doing as they were making their navigating to the national championship, a shot away from being the national champions. The culture is changing in Tucson, I can tell you that much. Was at the U of A spring game for football just a couple of weeks ago. The loudest cheer of applause was for Adia Barnes when she was announced. So it seems like things are changing. Sam Thomas, a big part of that, going to be a big part of their success this upcoming year. So we're going to catch up with her and talk to her about how her offseason's been going, what it's been like, and what she anticipates McHale will be like. They had the best season probably in program history, accomplished so much. They did it virtually in front of no people in person because of the pandemic. So what is her expectations for what McHale will be like moving forward? So I got a lot of getting to a lot this next hour, but let's start our rundown brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. I told the story a few months ago, but I think it bears repeating. Kristen Muir, you know the story of her. She was one of the great kickers at Marcos Denisa, set state records, most points scored by a girl in a varsity football season, first girl to score a point in an AIA state championship a few years ago. She had a rollover accident in January, was left partially paralyzed. Her rehab is going incredible. It's no surprise to anybody that she was able to work as hard as she did to get where she is now. She's now walking with a walker. The progress she's making is incredible. But one day we heard from Desert Financial Credit Union and said, hey, we saw the story. We want to help. What can we do to help support her? What gifts can we buy her? What can we do? And that was unprompted. They just saw the story, and then that's the type of people that are supporting us. So please, if you love what we're doing, please support the people that are supporting us. So let's get into the rundown. And first things first, Phoenix Suns. Able to take care of business. This has been a dramatic enough series. I don't think, I don't know what it would have happened in a game seven scenario, how dramatic that would have been. But the Suns go to LA, take care of business in game six in a dominant performance. With a big storyline early on, Anthony Davis cleared to go in the first couple of minutes. It was very clear that he wasn't quite right. He was running very gingerly. If you guys remember addictinggames.com for people of my age, I remember that was a big thing back when I was like 12, 13. The QWOP running game where you take the Q and the W, the O and the P, and you try to, bounce them back and forth to get someone to run, and it looks very awkward. That's exactly how Anthony Davis looked last night running. He only lasted 5.5 minutes. Respect to him for trying to go his team facing elimination, trying to help where he could, but it was very clearly he was not right. And it reminded me a lot of when Chris Paul wasn't right, but he was playing, had been cleared. It seems like that second stinger that he had, or that second moment where he went down in the previous game in game five, it seems like that's behind him. He played well, but the story was Devin Booker. And what he was able to do. Jay Crowder got them off to a hot start, but it was really Devin Booker that took them to a next level. He's been compared so much to Kobe Bryant. We know the role model that Kobe has been to him, the relationship that they had when Kobe retired. He told Devin to be legendary. Devin has that tattooed on his body. He has it written on his shoes. And a lot of people compare the two of this could be the next Kobe type in this current game. So I started looking at Kobe played 33 closeout games in his career, or 33 games where he eliminated a team in the postseason. That's pretty impressive. Like 33 in a career. That's wild. Devin has now played one. But I went through all the stat lines, have a whole Google Sheets that I just went through and kind of collected some data, just kind of poking around during the game. And he averaged, Kobe averaged about 25 points, about six rebounds, you know, very, very Kobe Bryant numbers. But his best line, best stat line that he had, May 13th, 2001 against Sacramento. I think everybody remembers that series. That was a wild series. His line that night, 48 points on 15 of 29 shooting, 1 for 1 from three, 17 for 19 from the free throw line, 16 rebounds, 3 assists. Here's Devin Booker's line last night in his first opportunity to eliminate a team. 47 points, 1 point short, 15 of 22 for field goals, made the same amount of field goals, 7 less tries, 8 from 10 for three, 7 more threes, but shot 80% from behind the line. 9 for 9 from free throw, had 10 less attempts than Kobe did in that game. 11 rebounds, so 5 less than Kobe, and then 3 assists, the same number. So that should tell you the type of player that Devin is. I even mixed them up right there between Devin and Kobe. He even said coming off the court, he looked up at the 8, at the 24. Kobe Bryant, the only player to have two numbers retired. And that's at Staples Center. So as he was walking off, Gina Mizell asked him, "Hey, I saw you take a minute. What were you thinking?" And he said, "I was thinking about Kobe. And I know Kobe would have been proud." This was a very Kobe-esque performance. And this should tell you, obviously, 33 games to work with. That's wild. But certainly for game number one, that's very telling of the type of assassin that Devin Booker can be. You know, when they have the chance to eliminate a team, he's not going to let it get to a game seven. He's going to completely take over. Someone pointed out to me, this should tell you how different those two NBAs are. And yes, those two eras of NBA, Kobe at the beginning of his career, Devin at the beginning of his career, very different. You can see that Bryant took 1 3-point attempt that night. You know, that like, the shooting has gone further and further back. That says something. The defense is slightly different, but these numbers are still impressive. These numbers, the cold-bloodedness of these numbers show the type of player that Devin Booker can be. So now it's going to be, I think, the big matchup for the Nuggets will be Nikola Jokic against DeAndre Ayton. Ayton played tremendously in the postseason, and he went up against one of the best in Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis was hurt for some of that, wasn't at his best. Nikolai is having, if he's not the MVP already, I think it's only a matter of time that he's going to be named that, unless someone else goes on a crazy run. But that's going to be the guy you have to go through. You're going to have to go through an Aaron Gordon. This is a long Denver Nuggets team. Not having Jamal Murray hurts that series quite a bit from a strictly fan of good basketball. You know, you would have loved to see Devin Booker and Jamal Murray go head to head. You would have loved to see the potential scoring options that those two teams have. But this is going to be, I think, another kind of slugfest. But just getting past that mental standpoint of it's the Lakers, it's LeBron, it's Anthony Davis, this is not your true 7 seed. The fact that the Suns were able to do this, I think that the West is pretty wide open, but the Suns are certainly, I don't think it necessarily goes strictly through Utah. I think the Suns certainly have a chance to really now make a run and have some confidence. Obviously, it's going to rely a lot on CP3's shoulder, because that was a very different team. And campaign did a tremendous job stepping up. And able to, you know, really shoulder that load, pun not intended. But it was that weird kind of in between where it seemed like Chris was good enough to be on the floor, but how effective was he going to be? That's where the Suns struggled the most. Aside from that, I feel like they really dominated the series. They took care of business in game one, in game five, in game six. It was those middle ones where the injury was really lingering. That's where we saw some issues. So it's going to be certainly a fun road. We've already seen what the Valley's like when they really get going. This is certainly a Suns town. They are starving for meaningful NBA basketball in the summer, because they haven't had that in a long time. So it's going to be really fun to watch the rest of this. We have a lot of other topics we can certainly cover. Diamondbacks continue. It seems like the injuries are just continuing to pile up for them and everybody across the league. And it's going to be tough to evaluate Torey Lovello in his final year when there are so many players that are on the injured list, especially in that rotation. There are so many players that, are having those soft tissue injuries. And it's not just a Diamondbacks problem. It's a everybody problem. But this was a team that was already, talent-wise in the NL West, they did not have the same sort of guns that the Dodgers or the Padres did. I thought they overachieved the first couple weeks. I predicted them to go 500. They obviously had a really rough stretch there in May. Historically, they have played good baseball in June and really been able to, whether they're up or down, it seems like May seems to, if you compound a okay April with a bad May, usually, the under Torey Lovello, those teams might struggle the rest of the way. But they've played meaningful baseball late in the season every year, except for really 2020, where it was, I think you can take a lot of that in context and realize that the issues were greater than just, poor play on the field. But it seems like there are always those May issues, and then June they bounce back. Okay, July, can kind of be a bit of a crapshoot. So we'll see how they bounce back. But it's a tough situation. And looking, and I saw Bob Nightingale report that maybe Bruce Bochy would want to come back and potentially coach for the Diamondbacks. It sounds like he's itching to come back. Would the team want to pursue that risk, him not signing with the Diamondbacks, signing elsewhere, and losing a good manager in Torey Lovello? Because I believe he's a good manager. You can certainly, this is a results-based business, but I think there's a lot of context with why this team is struggling. Him and Mike Hazen have done a tremendous job first 4 or 5 years of their tenure here, making the farm system one of the best from one of the worst when they took over, playing meaningful baseball and staying competitive. It's usually an either or. It's not a both. They've been able to do that. Are they not in a great situation? When you look at the rosters compared to the Padres, compared to the Dodgers, yes, those are what one of these things is not like the other thing, right? Like those two are two completely different animals. That's a challenge that they're going to have to go deal with. And I think it's exacerbated because of the limited funding they had the last year, the deals they had to make. They dealt Starling Marte. They dealt, Archie Bradley, some big players. Madison Bumgarner has been much better this year. But I think with the contract, it's going to be similar to a Zach Greinke one, where if he's not dominant every single night, people are going to question that deal. And if you need a major league ace with the accomplishments Madison Bumgarner has, you're going to have to pay him like one. And that's the deal that they made. So Diamondbacks in a strange middle ground. We'll see next couple of weeks, I think, are going to be critical, whether they're going to be sellers at the trade deadline or they may stand pat, maybe add, kind of do in the past. They've sent some players off. They've brought some players in. You think of Zach Greinke, that was the same. They brought Zach Gallen in the same day. So maybe, it seems like it's not as binary for Mike Hazen. It's kind of what can make the team better. And that's in the long run, in the, immediate future, a lot of complicated questions, but that's why he gets paid the big bucks. So, has he been perfect? No, but I think, Mike Hazen has been really, really, really good so far. So, going to be interesting to see, but, coming up next, let's talk some NBA. Phoenix Suns advancing, just knocked out the Lakers. Now they're playing Denver. PJ Carlissimo with ESPN, one of the best NBA analyst out there. He joins us to talk all things NBA playoffs. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and biggest story here in the state is the Suns advancing in the postseason, taking down the Lakers. Now we'll face the Denver Nuggets in the next round. And we are joined by veteran ESPN NBA analyst, one of ESPN's top radio broadcasters, PJ Carlissimo, to help break down this past round and looking ahead as well. PJ, thanks so much for joining us.
Jordan, how you doing?
Doing good. Obviously, a lot of buzz here in the state, so excited to talk to you. With this matchup between the Suns and the Lakers. This wasn't your typical 2-7. You know, the Lakers had a lot of firepower, a lot of injuries. Many picked the Lakers to win this series. Obviously, a lot of injuries played in round one as well with Chris Paul, Anthony Davis. Just what was your biggest takeaway from this matchup, how the Suns were able to overcome a few games without Chris Paul and now able to advance as the 2-seed?
As you said, I mean, it changed direction so many times. I mean, when it began, the bigger question to me was the health of LeBron and AD. And then it appeared LeBron was, if not 100%, was certainly capable of playing close to his potential. And then right away in game one, I mean, I actually felt if LeBron and AD were healthy, that they were still the defending champs. And I thought they had as good a chance as anybody to come out of the West. And it was evident early. They weren't close to 100%, but I thought LeBron was fine. And then how many minutes in was it when CP gets hurt? And you had to wonder about Phoenix because of the relative inexperience, playoff inexperience of the roster. And you knew how important Chris was going to be, but still, it's a young team. You want to see how a young team is going to go in the playoffs. And it was almost unfortunate. You get a team that has the second best record, not just in the West, but in the entire NBA. And just because of one of the many bizarre things that happened this year, they end up playing the defending champion, who obviously should not have been a number seven seed. I mean, let's be realistic. If LeBron and AD are healthy for most of the year, they're nowhere near a seven seed. So here's a team inexperienced in playoffs and welcome to the playoffs for the first time in double-digit years, and you get LeBron James and Anthony Davis and the defending champion Lakers. And but again, it just that went out the window in the first quarter of the first game. Then to me, the biggest story was didn't matter about AD and LeBron at that point. I just said, I'm watching them play. And, you know, we had games. I can't even keep track anymore. We've done so many games in so many different series. But from watching or broadcasting early, I said, I'm thinking they can't win without Chris Paul. He's just too important to what they're going to do. And he's like, looks like he's almost dragging his arm. He's like flinging his jump shots. When he does shoot it, it seems he's not going to shoot any threes at all. And I'm just thinking, well, guess what? They have no chance. And like the Lakers story became the back burner. Then AD gets hurt. And it's a question of CP all of a sudden looks like he's capable of playing. AD, you got to wonder whether he's going to play or not. And LeBron is kind of settled in and playing like LeBron can play even when he's hurt. So it just kept changing scenarios. But I thought Chris, to be able to come back, when he came back and showed he was capable of playing, then selfishly, I'm saying, I hope AD can play. This is going to be a great series. And it became evident to me, and I think to most people, if Anthony Davis isn't healthy and close to, you know, the Anthony Davis we're used to seeing, Phoenix is too good for them. They can't compete with Phoenix because the young guys, Devin in particular, were playing well. DeAndre was so good early. Devin was, you know, I think Book was good for the entire series, but a little up and down. But it didn't matter because AD wasn't there. The one game KCP doesn't play. Dennis Schroeder has a donut the one game. So, I mean, it's like, can the Lakers play with Phoenix? The whole thing just flipped around again. And I kept waiting to see from one game to the next, is Chris Paul going to be able to play? He played a really good game. Phoenix looks like they're all right. And I'm saying, yeah, but I don't want to hear 2 days later, well, guess what? Chris Paul, you know, it's really bothering him. He's not going to be able to do anything. And that never transpired. So to me, it was really impressive. They weathered the storm, if you will, of their first playoff experience. Chris appears, hopefully, to be able to play at close to Chris Paul level, and hopefully he's going to be able to continue to do that. And the Western Conference was so much better to begin with. When you look at the East and the West, the Eastern series were kind of over in three games. You said, well, that's it. You know, we know who's going to win the four series over there. And the ones in the West had so much more drama, still one going on. at this point to find out who's going to play. So I thought it was a total roller coaster up and down, but it was really impressive for the job that Monty and the young, again, I say inexperienced team did in the playoffs against the defending champion and a team that has two of the best players, not just in the game. I mean, they're both probably LeBron certainly, and I think AD, you're talking two Hall of Famers. So it was an incredible baptism for the young Phoenix Suns.
Mm-hmm. As you look ahead between the Suns and the Nuggets, obviously Ayton and Jokic look to be a big matchup there, a lot of length for Denver, but how do you see this one how is this next round going to go between these two teams, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, you know, you basically split in the regular, this with the new format or the format for this year, playing three games, there was no tie. So Denver wins two out of three. It's unusual to have a series where there's two bigs that are so capable of scoring. Jokic plays a lot more away from the basket than DeAndre does, but you got two guys who you can post up. It's going to be interesting to see them run on the floor. They're different. They're totally different bigs. They're still both relatively young, but I mean, DeAndre showed what he could do when he runs the floor and when he caught the ball in the paint against the Lakers. Lakers didn't really have anything to stop him at all. Whether that's going to happen, whether he can beat Jokic down the floor is going to be interesting to watch. It's too bad. Obviously, you would love to have seen Murray and Book and CP go at it. The backcourt matchup would have been incredible, but it's still you look at the two records, these teams was the second, and I'm trying to think where Denver ended up, fifth or sixth, probably overall. So you got two of the best teams, and it's going forward now. The matchups, particularly in the West, I mean, are going to be great games. I'm going to be really selfishly disappointed if we're not looking at 6 and 7 game series and kind of the old time playoffs where, you know, we'll all look at the stats getting ready for the first game and who played well against whom. One of the unfortunate things this year in the three games is, and I haven't taken a look at it yet. I've got my first one is going to be Brooklyn, Brooklyn series against Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. But who played in the three games? Did somebody sit out? Was somebody hurt? Who did what? But that's all out the window after the first game. The first game's kind of a feeling out game. And it'll be interesting to see, whether Denver can get one in Phoenix. But it's, you used to spend so much time getting ready for the opponent and you put so much stock in what happened in the regular season. And truthfully, once you play one game, that's all out the window. All you do is react to what just happened. Somebody scored 27 points. What are we going to do to stop him in the next game? But you just think, with the major injury that has happened to Denver and changed their team a little bit from the team in the regular season, everything's got to revolve around Jokic. Michael Porter is playing really, really well on the offensive end. He's a tough matchup because of his size, and he's shown, again, you got a young guy that doesn't seem that this is not his first playoffs, but still, it's his second, but he's gotten to another level. So I think the individual matchups will be great. You have to favor the Suns' backcourt right now. You probably got to give a little bit of an edge to the front court of Denver, just given the points that they put up in that first series. But to me, the first game will be a feeling out game, and then we'll really be able to zero in and say, okay, here's what's going to decide this series. And hopefully it's not going to be CP's health and Anthony Davis, whether he can play or not, KCP. It's just going to be what are the strengths of these two teams, and let's see what's going to happen on the court.
PJ, thanks so much for the time and the insight. No, it's a busy time of year, so appreciate you joining us.
Jordan, thank you. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy. And we have a guest from Arizona women's basketball, Sam Thomas, coming off a great Final Four national championship run here with the Wildcats. She's also an academic All-American, so going to get into that as well. Sam, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So can you just take us through what it's been like the past 3-4 months when you guys started your postseason run and what it's like since then?
Yeah, it's been incredible. I mean, from the postseason run, being in the bubble, all emotions, crazy emotions, sad, happy, excited, all you can think of. And then just coming home to our Tucson community, having a little parade for us, celebrating it. That was really nice. But then honestly, like, it hasn't died down. Like, the hype is still there. Like, we'll go to baseball games, softball games, and everyone's still like wanting to take pictures with us, congratulating us. So it's been nice to know like the impact that we've had on the Tucson community.
I was over at the U of A football spring game, and the loudest roar of applause came when Adia Barnes was announced. And you mentioned that it has been a sustained excitement around the program. Just what does that mean to you guys that, you know, it's not just, you know, throughout April, but now we're here in the summer months and people are still fired up about the program?
Yeah, it feels great. And it honestly makes it feel like it wasn't just like a little bandwagon celebration. Like, people actually believe in us. And now hopefully we can continue to be a top program. I honestly think next year we'll probably sell out a lot of games, or at least have close to full capacity. So I'm just excited to finally be able to play in front of some fans and get that experience that we had while playing.
I was saving that question for later, but you mentioned the crowd. Let's bring it up now. You guys accomplished so much this past season. Perhaps the only downside of this last season was that virtually no one was able to see you in person. What do you anticipate Mikhail looking like here for the next, couple of seasons now, and just what the atmosphere could be like there and have that true home court advantage that you guys have been able to build the past couple of years?
Yeah, I feel like honestly, it's going to be like how it was with the WNIT, having fans line up like hours before the game just to come see us. I remember fans would be out in the court before us, even coming to warm up, just sitting out there waiting for us. So I'm honestly expecting the same thing. I think fans are going to be so excited, especially since we haven't had sports in such a long time. I think basketball is really like the first time where it's like an arena with full capacity. So I know all the fans are going to go crazy. All the students are going to go crazy. So I'm really excited to enjoy this last year.
So you mentioned the roller coaster of emotions that was in the bubble, was in the kind of throughout the entire season. I have a feeling down 30 years, 40 years down the road, people are going to be asking, what was your 2020 experience like? But for you, I mean, what was it like going through that bubble? And, you know, we saw what was happening on the court, sometimes off the court, but, you know, can you just take us kind of behind the scenes of what that was like going through that and having not only the pressures of a tournament going on, but then also all the extra that came with it?
An insane experience. I couldn't even like just put it all in the words of how crazy it was, just knowing that, I mean, for a lot of us, this was our first tournament experience. And so just doing that alone, but then having to do it through COVID, where we're testing all the time and we're staying in a hotel, we're not getting fed what we normally would have been fed, you know, obviously the weight room situation. So just kind of like having all of women's basketball, like on all social media platforms, like everybody was talking about women's basketball, I feel like, during that time. So to be a part of that, it was insane. And then obviously to have the run that we did during all this time, I mean, just dealing with everything that we've had, like not knowing how long we're going to be there, how, what to pack for, how laundry, all just dealing with little daily stuff. It was just, it was crazy. But I mean, somehow we managed to pull through and stay as long as possible. So it was a great experience.
So now that you've been through this postseason run, you have some time to look back on it, probably gain some perspective. How do you think your team can now take this and use this to build upon for the next couple of seasons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think honestly, just keeping our spirits up, as anything can happen. Anything's possible, no matter what we go through. Obviously, no one was expecting us to go last year. So just that, obviously the expectations are going to be a little bit higher this year, but just knowing that if we just keep the right mindset and work hard, we can honestly hopefully come back and do it again, but this time win.
Mm-hmm. Obviously everybody got to see what Aerie could do, going through that postseason run. Obviously you guys have come up together, have been leaders on this team, but watching her the way she's been able to work the past couple of years, now being a top 5 pick in the WNBA, what did you take from her that you're now going to use to lead this Wildcat team?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly in the NCAA tournament, Aerie was just like a dog. That's the best way to describe it. She had all the confidence in the world, was proving everybody wrong, just playing with a chip on her shoulder, but then at the same time playing like this was her last time to make a statement, and she did exactly that. So I think coming into this next year, obviously I won't have her by my side, but I'm going to try and take that same mentality and instill it into me, and then show obviously the upperclassmen to help with the younger classmen. Just like, we need this type of mentality that no one can touch us. We're unbeatable. Even if people can beat us, we just have to go right back to that mindset of like, we're untouchable. We have to get back to the next game.
And you've been getting it done on the basketball court, but also in the classroom. Pac-12 Scholar Athlete of the Year. That's not just basketball. That is the entire conference in terms of athletics, also an academic All-American. Just what does that mean to you to get recognized for the hard work you're putting in the classroom as well?
Yeah, it means a lot. I was honestly, that was probably one of my favorite awards to win besides all the basketball awards, just because I take school very seriously and it is important to me. So just to be recognized for it, it was a great opportunity. I was super excited when I heard the news.
And at some point down the line, we're going to assume it's a long way away, but when you do, you know, finally hang up the jersey and move on from basketball, what would you want to pursue? What are you working towards in the classroom to have a career after basketball?
Mm-hmm. Well, right now I'm working towards becoming a coach. That's where kind of my degree is seeking towards, but I'm still up in the air. I did an internship with Nike, which was a lot of fun. So I have some connections there. So maybe kind of work my way over to Nike in the business route behind the actual activity of playing basketball, but kind of still work around basketball through Nike.
And what was that internship like? What were you doing on the day? What sort of things were you learning throughout that process?
Yeah, so they like to partner up the interns with like something that's totally not within their comfort level. So I was doing track athletes, and I was specifically doing footwear. So I was every day I was basically sitting in meetings, just listening to all the ideas that they were throwing about new shoes and like all the seasons, because Nike's so complex. They were explaining it all to me. But basically, like, my big project was making a list of all the athletes that are, or the track athletes that are signed with Nike around the world, and just making little bios about them. So that was kind of my big summer project that I was working on all summer.
Okay. So, and we'll wrap it up with this. Obviously have a lot going on off the court, but, you know, also focusing on, making sure that the Wildcats make another deep postseason run this year. For you personally, where are you working in your game? What are you looking to either fine tune or just continue to make sure you're playing at a high level?
Yeah, definitely become more of a scoring threat. Everyone tells me shoot the ball more. So I'm going to try and do that, but then also become more of a driver. That way it's kind of harder to guard me, because I'm not just going to be a shooter. I can also get to the basket as well. So that's where I'm going to focus on this season.
All right, Sam, sounds like a lot of good things happening for you, both in athletics and in school as well. Thanks so much for taking some time out of your day and joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Sam Thomas of the U of A women's basketball team. And this is the Brad Sesmat Show.